If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. If not for yourself, then those around who care like I do.
One day you'll see the clear blue. Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. We're taking you up to noon today. And then we're going to get you ready for the match tonight that'll air on Sports Radio 810. That's Sporting Kansas City in Houston tonight. Seth Sinovic, our guest, to talk about that very thing. How's it going, Seth?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. It's hard to say better than you guys are playing right now, Seth. I mean, it's 8 matches unbeaten, picking up points along the way pretty much every time, and then seeing a familiar foe in Houston this weekend. I guess let's start with that match. I got some other questions, but let's start with that match. What makes Houston so tough for you guys? And I guess, you know, is this where, you know, if you were going to rank rivalries for you guys, I mean, Houston's got to be somewhere at the top of the list, don't they?
Yeah, they're always a good team, and they always seem to give us fits. And rivalries come from past games and past experiences, and we've had a lot of big games with them in the playoffs. So yeah, we're excited for it, but they're a very difficult test. They're very, very fast and athletic up top, and very good on the counterattack, and can create a lot of problems for the defense.
Well, and I guess that's part of it, right? I mean, these tend to be, or have been with you guys, some high-scoring affairs before. And there's a big difference between your offense last year and your offense this year, just based on the scorebook alone. Is it that your two styles meet so well together that defense becomes kind of a harder priority in that because you guys counter-strike to what you're talking about? Or is it styles that seem to meet? What kind of makes those matches so entertaining?
Yeah, for whatever reason, you're right. I think we do seem to have a lot of goals scored in these games. You know, we try to play a possession dominant style, and they try to play more of a counter attacking style. So, they're looking to create chances off our mistakes with their pace up top, and we're looking to make their attacking players defend a little bit by keeping the ball. So, it's kind of clashing styles, but each one's pros and cons kind of. Work against the other. So, they're very talented team, very dangerous team. We've got to be at our best to beat them, for sure.
Last year, the team had, it was very stodgy on defense. And I'm not saying it isn't now, but it seemed like every game was just this, bring the thing to a halt, we'll out-execute them at the end. It's a lot more free-flowing on offense this year, it looks to me, Seth. I mean, the ball moves, or there have certainly been a lot more goals scored. It's a lot of the same guys. There's a couple of new faces in there. Is this just kind of, part of the personnel that's on the field? What do you guys see as far as what's been the increase in offense? Because this does look different offensively to me this year than it did just last. Does it feel different?
Yeah, I think it definitely feels like we're more dangerous this year. We've obviously got a few new faces in the team, but a lot of same guys back too. So I think it's a little bit of a mix of both. I think our style evolved a little bit every year, but in general, it's the same ideas and same concepts. And you can see what throwing a few new faces and a few new different players can be like to our offense. We've been very dangerous this year, and it's crazy because there's been so many different guys that have played, and little injuries here and there, and everybody that seems to come in has stepped up, played really well. And, we've had some young guys. I think we had 3 guys under the age of 20 that have played in the past couple weeks. So it's been pretty exciting to see.
Does that make you feel old, Seth? I'm older than you, so don't feel that bad.
Anybody that's born in the 2000s makes me feel really old. So.
You're like, oh God, you didn't even watch the same like Nickelodeon shows as me.
I know, crazy.
That's the part that always kills me. I'm like, oh, I don't even know what show you're talking about. We lived in a completely different childhood. I guess with that being said, like you're a local guy. Obviously, everybody knows you're from Kansas City. Part of the reason they've been able to come up, Seth, is their development through the academy and how far Sporting has come with that. What has it been like to watch the development for there? How far have you seen that grown as far as the players, the quality of player that's coming out of that? Because you guys have, Busio and others, you've had to get some minutes out of some really young guys.
Sure, yeah. No, it's been really exciting to see. Matt Beisler and I played club soccer together since we were about 7 years old. And, you know, we were training, you know, twice a week, every Tuesday, Thursday. And, man, the kids in the academy system are far beyond what we were at that age. It's crazy. They're training 5-6 days a week, and it shows. They're just much more technical, much more experienced. You know, obviously, we've got some of those younger guys that have stepped up in the past few games with Juan Cuzan and Busio and Jalen Lindsay, but I think there's quite a bit more to come as well as these kids get older.
So you're saying better at that age than you were? Better at 20 than you were at 20?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I was playing Colin. I'm trying to make a name for myself. You guys are signed to professional contracts and playing in Open Cup games and playing in league games. Yeah, it's crazy to see where they're at this age.
How hard is it? You know, you mentioned the Open Cup, and obviously you guys are in the quarters now for that. You won the Open Cup. I was there covering it last year. Obviously, the MLS Cup was back in 13. I know Peter has talked a lot with you guys about, you know, the three trophies. There's three trophies every year we can win. Does one start to become more important than the other if you're in the middle of it? Like, you're like, well, we won the U.S. Open Cup last year. We want to get back to the MLS Cup. Or do you rank them differently? Or is it, for you, is it three trophies and we're going for all three of them? Because there is kind of a mismatch of how to figure out the roster stuff with the extra matches, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's cliche as it may sound, whatever is next on the docket is kind of the most important one. Because I can tell you, having won both of them with MLS Cup and U.S. Open Cup, when you win that game, when the final whistle blows, I mean, it's the same incredible rush of emotion.
Sure.
Sense of accomplishment. It's incredible. So, you know, it's challenging with having the U.S. Open Cup in the middle of the year. And like we've seen, like I said, there's been some injuries in the past couple of weeks, but there's always a need, and there always seems to be somebody that steps up for us. And, you know, that's what we preach with depth and, you know, always being ready for your opportunity. So it's been exciting to see, but yeah, no, it really is whatever trophy is the closest to for us to win. And right now it's Open Cup.
That's got to be, you know, but that's, some of that is just the, I guess the feel, you know, like the accepted practice of soccer. Like, guys are always moving, right? I mean, it's different than any other sport in the sense that someone could be on loan while playing for you, or in the case for like World Cup players, they could be over there playing for their host countries. And like, that's just got to be some of the accepted part of like playing soccer, isn't it? Like, it's kind of a bonkers-y schedule sometimes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's you know, it's not as much of the norm with or in the United States, just because, you know, you look at the other main sports in the country with football and baseball and whatnot, and you know, the baseball has the I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but the World Classic or
yeah, the baseball World Classic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, in all the other major sports in the United States, that doesn't really, all this, that type of stuff doesn't exist. But you go outside the United States, that's an everyday thing for you know, all the other countries. They're playing Champions League over there, and they haven't like in England, there's the FA Cup, which is kind of the equivalent to the U.S. Open Cup here. So it's the norm, and yeah, it's something I think we're used to.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, over time, I would think you certainly get used to. Is it hard watching, have you been watching, is it hard watching the World Cup knowing the U.S. isn't in it? Have you been watching still?
I've been watching all the games. You know, we've got them on at our training facility every morning. It's been a little bit more difficult, a little bit harder to get as excited as I do with the United States, especially when you got the huge watch parties here in Kansas City at Power and Light, but... you know, I've got some Croatian heritage, and they had a big win against Argentina, so it's been fun to watch, nonetheless.
They destroyed Argentina. What, even close,
they destroyed,
man?
They, yeah.
I didn't realize you had some Croatian background, so that's good to know.
I do.
So
yeah.
Do you have like direct family that lives there, or like grandparents, or what's
I
the
believe
lineage?
It was my great great grandparents.
Okay.
That lived there, but I do have cousins over there as well.
Okay. Well, that's fine. That's a good one to, you know, like. I think it was like the Royals broadcast. They did those like 23andMe tests to find out like where a majority of your heritage is. Like, all right, we'll find a team for you to root for. And I'm sure for me to just end up being like, based on the fact that Ireland's neither, be like England, right?
There you go.
That's mostly the background. So I'd be like, all right, fine, go England, I guess. They seem fine. Like for me, I kind of get caught into the like, I like watching the best players in the world, so I enjoy watching Ronaldo work, or watching Messi work in those moments. So for me, watching the best players do the best things. I don't know if you saw that move by Neymar today, where he like flipped the ball beyond his head along the sideline, and yep, yeah, I don't know how anybody does any of that stuff.
That was pretty incredible. We were going crazy about that today too.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Yeah. Starting to be like, God, am I the only one that watches that and be like, I don't even know how that's possible. I really don't. Okay, so you said the next thing on the docket's the next thing. I know that's game to game. But how are you feeling about the U.S. Open Cup? You guys aren't far removed from that. Do you feel like every time you're back in it, back in that late stage, do you get any kind of advantage in knowing how to handle those situations, at least as far as, like I said, roster and time and getting rest for everybody for midweek games?
Yeah, I think experience plays a huge factor in the U.S. Open Cup, and that's honestly why I think we've been so successful. Obviously, you had to get your first one, or at least with this group of players or this core group of players. But every year we seem to have a little bit more experience, and every year we seem to be a little bit more comfortable in situations like that. Last year we were on the road in Houston, had a big win against them for the Open Cup. It's something I think we're used to, something we're excited for as far as the challenge goes. And like you said, it's another opportunity to win a trophy.
Trophies are fun. So, when they spray paint, Open Cup champions on walls. And, of course, for those, it's kind of like blind draws, right, for the home team. So you might end up getting another home game in that situation.
Yeah, no, that's obviously would be the ideal situation. As I'm sure you know, our home field advantage is pretty incredible, and the fans we have are pretty incredible. So, anytime we can get a elimination game at home, we're always pretty psyched about that.
I know tomorrow for the match, you guys, before your match, there's going to be the 21 Special Olympians. They're going to be doing an exchange game against Houston's version, right, tomorrow on the field.
Yep.
Have you had a chance to work with them at all this week?
We have not seen them at all this week. We do see them from time to time. It's a pretty cool event. They were out in Salt Lake last year and got to see them as we were doing our team walk and interact with them a little bit. It's pretty fun. I'm excited for that game as well.
No, that'll be a little bit different. Let me ask you a couple of things. Seth Sinovic, our guest here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810. As I mentioned, obviously you guys are playing Houston. They're a little bit further down the table than you guys, but only 8 points behind currently in a pretty tight Western Conference. The last couple of years, the playoff disappointments, you mentioned the home crowd. Obviously you guys haven't had a chance to play very many of those home games the last couple of years in the playoffs. How important is it to maintain that number one seed, I guess, for that reason alone, other than wanting to make sure you stay in the top to make sure you get to play somewhere at home first?
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, and obviously you can draw to the last couple of years as far as, our failures in the playoffs and losing on the road and how much of a difference that makes. So that's a huge goal of ours, to get past that, the wild card round or the elimination round and be able to have a home and away, whether it's first through third. Obviously, winning the Western Conference is our goal, because if we do win the Western Conference and hopefully lead the league in points, then we'll be able to host the MLS Cup final if that situation comes about. So, yeah, the home game is huge for us. Like I said, our fan base is incredible and gives us a huge, huge, huge advantage.
Do you like the way the MLS playoff is set up? Not to, put you under pressure, but do you like the aggregate scoring, the home and home? Do you feel that that's a pretty accurate representation of equal play?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty good. I think the one game elimination for the wild card is pretty difficult. The home field advantage in MLS is just, for whatever reason, is a huge advantage. Not as much this year, I guess, but you look at last year, it's difficult to win on the road. So that would be the only thing I may change about it. But other than that, playoffs are playoffs. You gotta find a way to do it somehow.
Wins are hard to get on the road, obviously. And when it comes to playoff time, that's going to be a thing. But you guys have had a couple of really nice road draws. And I know that, a draw sometimes, people find a fan might be like, okay. They might be disappointed in the result, although I would argue, depending on the opponent, it's not that. How do you guys feel about those, especially against difficult opponents? I know that there were some stats kicking around about how often Portland, right, goes in a situation like that where they're drawn at home. Like, for you guys, when you go on the road against a tough opponent, you feel pretty good about getting the point?
I think it depends on how the game goes,
okay,
to be honest with you. I you know, if it's a game where we feel like we're dominating the run of play, we feel like we've earned the victory, then we'll definitely be disappointed if we get a draw. But, you know, flip that around. If we're getting shelled the entire game and we sneak away with a draw and maybe should have lost the game, then we'll feel a little bit better. But to that point, I will say going into every game, we really do strive to put our an emphasis of our style of play on the game and try to dominate the game. And I think that's shown the amount of road victories we've had this year. I think we already have more road victories this year than we did the entire year last year. So that's something that we've put a lot of stress on. And so far it's going pretty well, but hopefully we can keep that going the rest of the year.
How different are the styles between last year and this year? Do you feel like you guys are playing different or just different players on the field?
I think it's a little bit of different players on the field. I think we're a little bit more dangerous on the wings as far as our goal-scoring ability.
Sure.
You know, Johnny Russell's obviously been a huge addition for us. Daniel Shalloway, while we had him last year, has elevated his game quite a bit. And we've got a few other guys that are extremely dominant that we had last year that seem to be playing a little bit better this year and finishing chances a little bit better. So it's a year-to-year thing, but definitely the guys we've got that we've brought in have been huge for us.
Yeah, no, I feel like you guys do look at, but you're saying it's a similar offense you guys ran though, right? Peter's like at least schematically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're trying to dominate possession in the game, but we're trying to be a little bit more. We've put a little bit more emphasis on going to goal a little bit more and not just having possession for possession's sake. And that definitely wasn't the goal of ours last year, but I think we've emphasized as far as the possession side of it. That wasn't the goal, just to have possession. Obviously, we want to score goals, but I think we've emphasized scoring goals and getting in more dangerous areas this year.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. I completely understand what you're talking about, Seth. Last thing, I guess, and I'll let you get out of here, since you mentioned you're rooting for Croatia, who do you think actually wins it? You got a favorite? Did you guys do a World Cup pool or anything? You guys put names in a hat?
We did do a World Cup pool. You know, we're picking who got out of the groups, pick the semifinals, pick the winner. I picked Germany.
Okay.
That's probably the easiest pick out there, but that's who I thought was going to win. I still think they're going to win, even though they lost to Mexico in their first game.
Mexico's really good in that game, so it's not.
Yeah, they were good.
Are you with there was that ad with Dom. Are you with that? Like at least some, you know, the U.S. isn't in it. Are you rooting? I know you said you're rooting for Croatia. Do you find yourself rooting for some of the Mexican players?
I'll hope that CONCACAF does well. I probably wouldn't go as far as Landon Donovan has gone in some of his ads, but I definitely would rather have a Croatia or somebody like that win over Mexico, but not that I have any ill will towards Mexico, but it's a rival, so you don't want your rival to win.
Bingo. Right? I mean, that's not how it feels like.
Yeah.
Anytime I'm watching baseball, I'm like, I don't want an AL team to win it. Just let someone in the NL win the World Series this year.
Absolutely. Don't let the White Sox win.
It's fine. How excited, by the way, were you to find out that the World Cup's coming to obviously the North America, and that there's a pretty good chance Kansas City, or at least a chance Kansas City, could get a game?
Yeah, I'm extremely excited. That's I've never had the opportunity to go to a World Cup game.
Wow, me either.
And yeah, I'm going to. Some of the guys were actually just talking about how they may rent an RV and kind of drive around to different stadium sites and try to go to as many games as possible. So
can I get in on that? Is it too late, Seth? Can I go with you guys? I'll stay out of the way. I'll be quiet
absolutely.
And sit in the back, whatever it takes.
The more the merrier, yeah.
Great. This sounds great, man. I've never seen a World Cup game either. I can't wait. That's a huge stage. There's just so much. I don't think people, like, sometimes TV doesn't sell it, and I know that, you know, American soccer is really growing. But, man, that is, like, World Cup, you know, crowds, World Cup atmosphere. I mean, that's really something to behold, I think.
Yeah, my wife is not a huge soccer fan by any means, but so I try to explain the significance of the World Cup and everything, and I'll show her videos of watch parties in other countries and trying to get her to understand just how cool it is. So no, it's gonna be awesome. I'm really excited for that.
I know. I was watching like the people in Tunisia watching some 2,000-year-old amphitheater. I'm like, this is cool, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Want to be a part of that, Seth. I really do appreciate the time. Good luck in the match tonight, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Make sure to listen to the Sporting Kansas City match tonight here on Sports Radio 810. We appreciate Seth Sinovic joining us. And make sure to get out to the Church of the Resurrection Car Show. That's where we are right now at 137th and Null. The event is free and open to the public. It is here until 1. Plenty of beautiful cars. We actually even got free lunch from Fresh and Tasty. It's not going to be free for you, but it looked like all the prices were more than reasonable at the Fresh and Tasty food truck.
And so it was very fresh and tasty.
It was. I had a pulled pork burrito.
Yeah.
It did not suck. Charlie put mustard on mac and cheese.
It's because there's a mac and cheese hot dog, so mac and cheese on top of a hot dog, and you can't have a hot dog without mustard.
So what's the verdict? Is it okay to put mustard on?
It was a little weird with the mac and cheese, but I kind of tried to separate the two a little bit. But it was overall very tasty.
Why wouldn't you just have gotten a hot dog and some mac and cheese?
Because they offered it both together. And I don't know if they could split it up, but I saw it, and I was like, that sounds awesome, so I'm going to grab that.
You're a much more adventurous eater than I. Certainly more than Beards.
Oh, Beards won't eat anything.
Yeah.
He'll stick to ham sandwiches and...
On white bread, with no condiments.
White bread, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me for a minute while I create this Twitter poll. It says, is it okay to put mustard on a hot dog that also has mac and cheese on it?
The answer to that poll is yes.
Yes or no is the answer. My thought is no. Good God, no.
I don't even like mustard, so that sounds doubly gross to me.
I also don't like mustard.
Oh,
but,
it's okay.
But
you
I
guys
certainly
would
put it on mac and cheese.
Leg in this fight here.
You want to put a wheel spin on the results of this?
Oh,
there,
gosh,
Charlie?
No, I do not.
How comfortable you feel about your mustard decision on mac and cheese?
I'm not comfortable. I'm comfortable with my
your decision.
Decision and just having mustard on a hot dog always.
See, I don't think that's weird.
I don't
think mustard on a hot dog's weird. I think it's weird with mac and cheese.
Like, it drives me nuts when I see people do it just ketchup on a hot dog. Like, I guess you can let ketchup and mustard go. Like, I'll let that go, but. Gotta at least have the mustard on there.
I don't put mustard on hot dogs yet, do you?
No, I do not. I put my hot dogs are weird. I also don't really like hot dogs, but I do ketchup, onion, jalapenos. Delicious.
Like jalapenos is also a good touch.
I do like onion on a hot dog, so I'll agree with you there. All right. It is brown mustard. Somebody was asking for the purposes of voting. I'll let them know it was brown mustard.
It's spicy mustard, yeah.
Does that make it better, though?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
My thought is, no, it changes nothing, Jed, but I guess, like, standard yellow mustard might have.
That's certainly what I was envisioning at first, and that sounded gross. I don't know. Adding the spice, I can appreciate, Charlie, but I don't know if that would – it's still a mustard.
Yeah, I've got questions about all of that.
Yeah.
I've got very serious questions about all of that. But anyway, I'll put that poll up on Twitter, and you can vote for it then. We're here at the Resurrection Car Show, as I mentioned. We're going to be here broadcasting until noon. The event is until 1. But then in sitting here and looking at the cars, and then Jed and I were talking in the break, and that's why Charlie's here. He was here to set up the account, and we brought him in for this segment. Because we might dream cars, right? I mean, this felt like as good a time as any. If I'm going to sit in an event and have a radio conversation about the car we'd want just regularly and the car we'd want from a, a TV or movie or something like that, this felt like kind of the good opportunity. Did you think about it? Jed, do you have the list of possible cars in your mind?
I do. I understood, at least when we were texting about this, the exercise a little bit differently. So
sure, that's fine.
I have a couple of different things that I'll throw out whenever it gets around to my turn.
That's fine. I'm open to it. Let's start with, I'd say, let's say it's a two-car situation would be my thought, right? It would be two things. I'd say, one, just a regular car for any purposes, and two would be the car from a movie or television show. Dream car, I think, personally, I like those old, like just regular car. I really like those old, like Toyota Land Cruisers that get, you know, that get decked out like the cool Jeeps, man, that can go underwater and have all the camping gear that can be attached to it and kind of have that big boxy frame. Personally, it's like one of those cars that I always kind of wanted to own. And I think that if I was given the opportunity, that would be pretty high on the top of my list. Like those old Land Cruisers, and like sometimes they'll like chop off the top so that they're like convertibles. Or like the old 4x4, I'd be all over a car like that. Is that a weird choice? I feel like that's a fine choice for a regular car.
I think it's weird because you don't camp or go to any of these weird places that you're talking
about. I go to Colorado to camp every year.
I don't buy it.
Every year, Jed. Would you go camping?
Yeah, I've been camping before many times.
So have I many times. I like that style of car. That's all. I mean, if it were going to be a sports car, it'd be something different. Like, if I were choosing, like a Ferrari or Porsche or Jaguar or something like that, I can't imagine Ferrari be the first choice. I think I'd want like a 60s muscle car before I wanted any of those. Is that crazy? I think that's what I do. Fine, what's yours? Just regular car before we do the movie. Regular car you want. What's your dream car, Charlie?
Oh, okay, sorry. Regular car, dream car. I've always been a huge fan of Camaros, so seeing the Camaros as we were rolling in was pretty cool. But, I'd have to say either Camaro, but I was also a big fan of the Zs, 350 and 370Z.
Okay.
So those were always nice.
Some version of a Camaro that's like an old muscle car.
68 Camaro, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Jed, how about you?
My first car ever was a 1983 Mustang convertible. So having a sweet Mustang, like a 68 Mustang, would be pretty nice. I'd probably go with that.
That's not, like, I was
not
him.
Very utilitarian, but I think that'd be pretty badass.
Well, whatever, you don't have kids.
There's a Shelby GT Mustang point. that just pulled up here, and I believe
hop in and
68.
Drive it on back to the station. I'm sure they'll be fine with that.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Jen's got to figure out how to scratch off the VIN numbers so that it appears to be his car.
I know people who can do stuff like that. That's just fine. I just need to get the car back here, and then it'll be fine.
There's
That's
a Mustang right behind it, past the GT, too. There's one, isn't there? No, that looks like an old, Ford Falcon or something. That looks a little bit different than that, at least based on that. Fine. So those are and that's fine. Like, Jed, I went to the 8th grade dance in a cherry red 66 Mustang, right? So I get the appeal of that car. Like, somebody drove us in that. I do get the appeal of that car.
Yeah, my brother-in-law has one. It's pretty, I think his is maybe a little bit or newer, like a 70 something, but it's pretty sweet nevertheless.
Is your brother-in-law rich?
No, it was, I'll forget.
Asked that because, being able to afford any of these cars, I'd be like, how rich are all these dudes?
I think it was his mom's original car that she saved all these years, and he's restored. It's a really nice car, needless to say.
Yeah, this Mustang GT350 in front of us is not an ugly car. It's got the, how do you feel about red with white racing stripes?
I'm fine with that. Red's my favorite color. The racing stripes I probably could go without, but I guess beggars can't be choosers. Or in this instance, car thieves.
Car thieves can't be choosers.
Yeah,
we're kind of in the Mustang section because there's a white 60s Mustang over there across, too.
No, white's too hard to keep clean.
Especially in a car like that you want it to always look clean, right? Always
my car is evidence of that now. When you want it to look clean, you just go and look at the Dodge Charger in the parking lot. Sparkling.
Problem. Well, if you had a nicer car, you'd keep it clean. Let's do movie cars now. Charlie, what's yours?
Favorite movie car?
Yeah. If you got to drive any, it could be a Batmobile. I don't really care.
Ooh.
I would think that the one from Batman Begins is slightly impractical for car purposes. Certainly the one from the 60s TV show is a lot more practical. What TV or movie car are you interested in? I don't care if it's a dude's a hazard car, whatever one you want. I don't think anybody else is going to share my answer. Let's put it that way.
It's tough. Come back to me.
Jed.
All right, so I had multiple different answers, and this is also where my weird thing came in, because I thought it was more iconic cars. So
sure.
I guess if I had to pick one, I would either go with probably an Aston Martin from an old Bond. I think that would be pretty nice.
Sure.
It'd be hard to pass up General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
So that's a good one. But when I was initially thinking about this and I was thinking about iconic cars, the two that stand out to me, and it's just because I'm a nerd and watch so much Simpsons, are the pink, just regular car that Homer drives, and then the station wagon. You see them in every intro to every episode. So all of those are just iconic cars to me, even though they don't exist in real life.
Has somebody made them in real life, probably, though?
Shane went to the Universal Studios, and I think that they had them there. So, I don't know, in some sort of setting. I know that they're available in Legos. I don't know, a boy can dream, can't he?
No, it's fine. Mine is also a dream car, so we're going to go back to Charlie. You know which one I want? I'm a family man now, Jed. I have one kid and a second on the way, which means my dream TV car also needs some practicality. I want the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Stinks van.
Yes.
And I've seen someone recreate it, and it looks phenomenal.
I have a Lego set of that. That's outstanding, Cody. Great pick.
Isn't that a phenomenal choice? Like, I want the side to come down to, you know, like, so that there's, like, a chair on the door panel, like I think it happens in the original toy, which was a popular toy of mine in childhood.
Yeah, no
But tell
kidding.
Me not you would not drive that car around if that were, like, on the road.
I certainly would. I thought you were going to say the mystery time machine or whatever from Scooby-Doo.
That's not bad. Like,
the
if
mystery
thinking,
machine.
Like, you start thinking van, you're like, oh, it's mystery machine. No, man. I want... That one's weak, and for people who are hunting mysteries, I want to
something
crime
like that.
Fighting. I mean, if I got to drive a van, man, I need it to be slightly cooler than this. This is the one I've seen, by the way. Look at this homemade van. Look at this thing.
Oh my!
Like, if I were a billionaire, I'd just be like, yeah, make this, please, because I'm gonna drive this around when we go places.
Link me into that picture
it's
on Twitter.
So
I would
good.
Like to take a look.
It's so good. What's yours, Charlie? Have you thought about it?
Yeah. For some reason, the first car that came to mind was the Gran Torino from Starsky and Hutch. I was also a big fan of that one. But I'll do you one better, and I would like to own the DeLorean.
Yeah,
from Back
also
to the Future.
Strong. Nice. Yeah.
DeLorean is pretty much like that feels like the layup of this conversation. Like, that seems like
sure,
the obvious one.
Sure, but
I don't blame you.
That probably goes up with the Batmobile. Obviously, that'd be a top choice as well.
Yeah, I was surprised no one went with Batmobile.
Yeah.
I would go with, which Batmobile would you choose, by the way?
I mean, you got to go with the Dark Knight one because it's the most tricked out one,
nah,
right?
Nah, man, I'd take the one from the 60s. That car's too cool.
Sure.
Like the bubble glass and the red interior. I think I'd go that. Although I'd make a strong argument for the Val Kilmer one.
Original
Batman?
Not the one with Michael Keaton.
Not the campy TV show. That's what I was
No, that would be pretty awesome, though.
That's the one I want. I want campy TV show Batman car. Because, and I know it doesn't have all the gadgets that, you know, you're saying Michael Keaton's does. Plus, I have a lot of respect for Michael Keaton as Batman because he said it in a commencement speech now, so. Right? I can't argue any of that. That's fine. I just wanted to know. That was it. It was just a short conversation. We can take a break, and then we can come back. We're here at the Church of the Resurrection car show. You can come see some of your very own dream cars. They've got some, like, courtesy shuttles driving people around to different parts of the parking lot because it's a pretty good size space. There are, you know, several hundred cars here. So, obviously, to get a look at all the different cars throughout, you can kind of cruise around and get a good look. I can see, like, they've got one of those new Teslas that the doors open like the Lamborghini, and I can see a bright yellow Ferrari's hood open. Not too far from yours, plus all the 60s muscle cars, which appears to be the row that we're kind of stuck down. So come by and see us. I got a couple Sports Night t-shirts, so if you mention you heard this in the next, like, 30 minutes or so, I can get you one of those as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. There was a conversation we started last night about the Chiefs that I'd love to get more opinion on because I do think that it's something maybe I'd undervalued about the Chiefs going into this season. So we'll do that next. It's the Church of the Resurrection car show. We're at 137th and all, so come by and see us. But we'll come back and finish up Sports Saturday next.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I have two pieces of bad news, and that seems almost impossible on a gorgeous day out here at the Resurrection Car Show. Two pieces of bad news. One, I do not get to drive the Ferrari today, Jed. The good news on that department is that Kent has said because it can't move from its current location at the show. The good news is, he said he will buy me lunch and let me drive it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad.
So that's the one piece of bad news that I don't get to drive today, and that makes me sad.
That isn't bad news, though. That's free lunch and driving a Ferrari.
Actually, it might be good news. That's a good point. Yeah. This actually might be good news.
It's so crowded there. You can really open it up, man.
You're going to let me take it on the street? I'm going to take this thing on the actual road? Dope.
There won't be a lot of other expensive cars for you to
ride. Do you think in the next 2 weeks I can get like a hat with a Ferrari logo on it so I can just look really weird?
Sure.
Amazon, man. You can get anything. You could get it today. You could probably get it delivered by the end of the show.
I'm a Prime member, man. Get this stuff covered. Are you kidding? Gotta get this Ferrari.
They will send a personal drone to you to drop it off right here.
Smart.
At this car show.
I like where their head's at. So the Resurrection Car Show, by the way, that we're at, it's to 1. And there are tons of awesome cars and food trucks. You can get lunch, stand outside a nice day, and check a look at all these cars. Plus, they'll take donations. It's free to the public. They'll take donations. The two charities they donate to are to help people fix their cars who need it to maintain their job, which seems like a pretty good, reasonable thing to want to help people with. And then the other 80% goes to feed needy families in the Kansas City area, so also incredibly important. The other piece of bad news, Jed, the NFL has denied Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's request to put MD on the back of his jersey because why would the NFL want to highlight the fact that one of their players is a doctor?
Yeah, having fun, promoting their league, having individuality. I don't think that's what the NFL's about.
He didn't ask for a sponsorship. He just asked to put MD on his jersey. How is this a no?
That would distinguish him from others and make him more of a figure, Cody. They're all nameless faces, according to the NFL, except for Tom Brady.
That seems like a bad strategy moving
forward. I agree. I had a conversation with Pete Enoch yesterday about how my least favorite sport at this point is the NFL.
You personally?
Me personally.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because of stuff like that, I guess?
I could go down the litany, but we don't have a lot of time, and I'm sure that's not where you want this conversation to go.
I'll listen to part of it, at least.
A lot of it has to do with the fact that they are very backwards in their approach to what they should be doing for fans' sake. I will leave it at that.
Okay.
Interpret that however you like.
We can have a longer conversation about it later. I don't necessarily think that that is an unreasonable stance. I do think they do an awful job promoting their league. And baseball's bad at it, too. It's like they sent out a tweet the other day about Mike Trout. And we're like, oh, we're just trying to promote our guy. And it's like, yeah, dummies. Like, you're making fun of the fact. Do you realize why people are saying you're bad at promoting Mike Trout? They're not joking about it so that you can fire off one tweet with some stats in which he's good. You're not promoting Mike Trout enough because not enough people realize that they might be watching the best baseball player of all time. He might not end up being that, but his current path could take him there. And you're just like, that's cool. We're fine. Like, the NBA doesn't hide behind that they might be watching the best basketball player of all time. LeBron James is on everything forever. They keep showing, like, Yankees-Mets games on Sunday night. You're like, no, play the Angels. Let Mike Trout shine. Stupid football.
Well, and with Ohtani getting hurt, the chances of being able to have Mike Trout displayed are even limited now.
Oh, God, yeah, I know, and that's a shame. Baseball's weird. Baseball just wants the name of the team rather than they're like football. They're like, it's the name on the front of your jersey, not the one on your back. Wrong. For league promotional-wise, you want heroes and villains. And heroes and villains do not come from teams. They come from people. The NFL, like, not putting MD, that's so silly. Like, I knew that they were never going to approve it. And yet, finding out that they didn't is like, what is wrong with you? This is the easy decision, NFL. I know you're bad at making the hard ones, but this is the easy decision. These are the ones that you shouldn't get wrong.
They're bad at those ones, too.
Yeah, clearly. Next time I'm in one of those, I think Radio Row, the last two or three, like a big press conference with Roger Goodell. Maybe I'll ask that specific question. Like, you know, why would you be anti this? Like, specifically a player who, like, doesn't this prove that you're, like, anti-individualism when it comes to teams? And then I'll see what he has to say about it, right?
That's
the only chance I get to talk to Roger Goodell. I guess it'd be a good thing to ask Clark Hunt come, NFL training camp time.
I certainly think you should. I would applaud you.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. Like, why do you hate promoting an individual person over an individual accomplishment, especially when, you know, like the knock on football players that they're dum-dums, right? And I know that to not be the case for every football player, but that's how people perceive your league, that they're just people crashing into each other for no purpose.
Well, and especially linemen, too.
Yeah. Instead, you got a doctor, and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. You want to put MD on your name? Like, well, yeah. No, we're not doing that.
Seems like a harmless thing that they should just let it happen. I don't know. It's really dumb.
One of the things before we get out of here that I at least want to get opinion on, I only got into it for maybe like 4 minutes last night, and I thought it was an incredibly interesting stat, and I was curious if you guys thought the same thing as me. The Amateur Hour podcast, I'm sure you're familiar with them, just if you follow on Twitter or listen to other Chiefs-related content. They put out an excellent stat and absolutely one worth paying attention to. It was about pace of play. And while, you know, we all think of Andy Reid offenses as being slow, methodical, right? We agree?
Yes.
Like, stereotypical Andy Reid drive, 22 plays, 87 yards that took 17 minutes. That's what we think.
Yeah,
and that's
for
pretty,
sure.
And that's all. And that's pretty fair, by the way.
At least three passes behind the line of scrimmage.
That's not an inaccurate representation of what this offense has been during that time. So, in pace of play, Football Outsiders put together a stat. They compiled the numbers for it. Amateur Hour podcast did. They compiled the numbers. And pace of play, according to Football Outsiders, the Chiefs in 2017 were 31st, 28th in 2016, 32nd in 2015, 30th in 2014, and 11th in 2013. So a bit of an anomaly in that final year. And so you're like, yeah, that totally matches up with the things that I would have assumed based on the things I know about the offense. And my assumption this entire time was like, oh, God, you know, Andy always wants to call a play, and he gets in the way, and it takes too long to get the play call in because it goes through too many people. And that was the assumption I had about this offense. And I think I might be wrong. I think that that's not the way that this works. Because, so it turns out, I think it's Alex Smith. And I think it was always Alex Smith. And I think something we actually have to pay attention to now is how fast the offense moves with Patrick Mahomes to find out if it's any different. Alex Smith in San Francisco ranked 27th, 27th, 24th, 18th, and 32nd. So you're like, oh, yeah, pretty much the same, right? So Alex Smith and Andy Reid just running their slow-paced offense. In Philly, with Donovan McNabb instead of Alex Smith, similar, you know, like they're going to put up similar quarterback numbers for their career, touchdown-to-interception ratio, yards, completion percentage. They're going to put down pretty similar numbers. Their overall offense in neutral game situations, so they get rid of, like, no big leads, no halves, just regular football, right? They ranked in Philly 8th, 2nd, 3rd, 2nd, 7th, 6th, 3rd, 5th, 7th, 4 more times, 10th, and 8th. They never ranked worse than 10th. They ranked on average about 6th in how quickly their offense moved compared to everyone else in the league. Is that a surprising stat to anyone else? And I'm not surprised that it turns out Alex Smith was running this offense slow. I just assumed it was a joint effort, and now I'm starting to think that maybe it was more about the way that Alex Smith handled the offense than it was Andy Reid, and we might be in line for a much faster-paced offense this year Kansas City.
I definitely think we're going to have a much faster-paced offense with Patrick Mahomes, but I thought Alex Smith and Andy Reid were kind of the perfect couple when it came to that. They both kind of, it seemed, but that is surprising.
I know,
surprising.
But I'm starting to think that that's not the case.
That is
he had
surprising.
McNabb, who was a conservative dude.
Yeah, not as conservative as Alex Smith.
They have almost identical average yards per attempt. I looked it up.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's surprising as
almost
well.
Identical touchdown-to-interception ratio numbers, almost identical. They've had shockingly similar careers.
Cody, was it in terms of pace, like time of possession, or was it in terms of plays used to get down the field?
Plays, no, in time it takes to run plays. Like, just pace
okay.
of play.
I see.
Like, because, you know, we see the clock run down to 5.
Sure. No,
four,
I get you now.
3. Like, it's pace of play.
Yeah.
Like, they have been one of the slowest pacing offenses in all of the NFL. And under Donovan McNabb, it was totally different. Jed, I mean, you've got to agree that at least those numbers, looking back to Andy Reid, either points to a fact that Andy Reid completely shifted philosophy or Alex Smith was the problem there.
I think it speaks to why Alex Smith was the problem for a few reasons. One of the reasons why you take that long to actually call the play and use as much motion is to be able to identify whether they're in a man or a zone. Being able to try and do that is just another aid that you can give to Alex Smith to try and break it down. Our complaint was always that he was a one-read quarterback, and then initially he would go where the play was called. He was independent of being able to decipher the fact that Tyreek Hill is streaking downfield, but Travis Kelce is open for an 8-yard, you know, hook route. I guess that would be where I would think is that it was just Andy Reid trying to recognizing the limitations of Alex Smith and giving him every advantage to move forward.
And that's a really good way. That's, again, another reason why we should feel really good about Patrick Mahomes. Because in the first year, Jed, you said that was his knock, right? When with his first read, made mistakes, or when with his first read, the offense didn't move as a result of that. That was actually their best. They ranked 11th that year in Kansas City. And after that, it went to a grinding halt in the pace of play department. I am firmly convinced that I think it'll be faster because I think that more suits Patrick Mahomes. But it's just another example of Andy Reid puts his quarterback in the best possible position and that he probably got the most conceivable out of Alex Smith. We'll find out. Now he's in Washington, yeah. Right? If his numbers keep shooting up the boards and it's worth the, what they give him, $80
million? Four years, 78 million.
So, you know, we'll find out if that deal's worth it, if it's just Andy Reid, but I think he puts quarterbacks in their best conceivable position. It's also why interception number rates under quarterbacks for Andy Reid, I don't know if you've seen these statistics before, like, career-wise, Michael Vick averages like 60% more interceptions than when he was with Andy Reid, and same with McNabb, and same with Kolb, and same with Smith, who had higher interception numbers when he was younger, too. I think when we're saying, you know, Mahomes might throw, when I hear people say he might throw like 17 or 18, I'm like, no way. I will firmly take the other. Take 17 or 18,
17,
I'll take,
yeah.
That's a lot of picks.
So but pick a game. I mean,
but people throw those
more
numbers out there. I just don't think that, I think Andy Reid does way too much to protect guys. Yet I think that's a good point, that some of that is just saying that, like, Andy Reid's like, okay, Smith is limited. I see how he's limited. He needs every single possible piece of information to complete this pass, and that's the way we should approach him. That's not a bad thought. I mean, it was a good idea by Reed, but it also made that offense painfully boring to watch sometimes.
And there's not anything wrong with that. I guess why it comes to my mind is that Sean McVay was credited so much with the development of Jared Goff, and it comes to find out that he was essentially telling him where to throw the ball. However, the quarterback is getting the ball to whichever playmaker, in my mind, is kind of irrelevant as long as they're doing it. That's where I sit as a person who evaluates the game. If you have to break it down for the guy to say, all right, you have to throw it now, it's literally Madden, me and you and Charlie playing downstairs, I guess I don't care as long as they're throwing touchdowns for the team I cheer for.
Yeah, yes, that's probably true. I don't care if Andy Reid's saying, you will throw it to this person for this reason, and he throws it to that person, and it's a touchdown. What do I care?
Well,
the
amount of weapons that the Chiefs have this year could be very helpful to that, too.
Yeah, I would say so.
Maybe.
Well, that's why I like,
if you like skilled players.
Yeah, I mean, if you like, you know, if Tyreek Hill's covered on one side, you got Sammy Watkins streaking on the other.
Personally,
if you like long touchdowns, I mean.
Tyreek Hill's last 13 touchdowns have come over 30 yards, by the way.
Not surprising.
That's an insane number. That's just ridiculous, mostly speaking, anyway. But beyond that, like, I just think that one of the reasons, and I'm not trying to, like, lead up the hype, too, because I do realize that there's still some limitations of a second-year quarterback, and that the offense won't just be chugging along, because even with Alex Smith and giving him every single second of opportunity to make the decisions, this offense sucked for, like, a month and a half last year. And they had pretty much all these weapons. It wasn't Frankie Hammond Jr. I don't know why I've been picking on him the last couple of weeks.
I think
somebody
that's fine.
A different bad wide receiver to use as an example. It feels like when I always say, because I always say like Tyler Palko when I'm talking bad quarterback, I feel like I should increase my horizons in the bad wide receiver department.
Junior Hemingway. He went to Michigan. I always like my Michigan guys.
Hey, good news, by the way. Sung Hwan Min, was that our player from South Korea?
It is.
Yes. Scored a goal.
Hey.
Did he? I didn't even notice. Yes, we are back in this thing. Dreas Mertens had an assist earlier today. Oh, man. Our team is coming.
Good day for team additional programming.
And Zerdan Shariki had a goal yesterday and an assist, I think. Wow.
Don't call it a comeback.
Wow.
We're still dead in the water.
We are pretty dead.
We're very, very behind.
Costa Rica is out also, our defensive pick. Way to go, Rudy. Thanks, pal.
Why did we choose Costa Rica? Can we talk about that?
We can for the last 90 seconds of the show. Didn't have a great strategy when it came towards picking defense. Charlie, would you like to expand?
Well, we had a great idea of trying to do it, but then they just started flying off the board, like right before we, of course, you know, wanted to take Spain or Germany or any of the favorites.
Was Costa Rica the last one available? Because I feel like it must have
been. Costa Rica was our second defensive pick. So, yeah, we picked England first as our defensive team, and that hasn't been too bad.
Looks like we should have chosen Russia.
Yeah, right.
After all this, made a huge mistake. Russia in general, the goal differential. All right, that's going to do it here. That's it. That's it for Sports Saturday. We're here at the Resurrection Car Show. It's still going to be happening for another hour. There's plenty of time. It's nice outside. If you live nearby, you want to take a look at some classic cars, it's free to the public. So you can come out here and check out all of the awesome cars. What an awesome event.
Yeah.
And for some reason, you can't make it this year.
Real quick.
Yeah, this is 16 years in the making. So for some reason, you can't make it out this year. Make sure to make it out next year, or make sure to donate to some of the causes that they were, you know, trying to work towards, including, you know, giving people money to work on their cars, including, you know, so that they can get to work, and including, you know, giving food to people in the area who do need it. But there's some awesome cars out here at the Resurrection Car Show. That's it for Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. Thanks to Jed on the other side of the glass. Thanks to Seth Sinovic for joining us. Thanks to Jared Sutton for joining us. And most importantly, thanks to you for joining us here as well on a Sports Saturday. We will talk to you guys later. Have a good one.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.